You're listening to How to Be Creative, a podcast about what it means to be creative across different disciplines, industries, life circumstances, and career structures. You'll learn tips for fitting creativity into your daily life and hear from a bunch of different people about how being creative has helped them reach goals, open doors, and live a more rewarding or at least more interesting life. I'm your host, Kat O'Leary, and I'm excited to introduce you to some of my favorite creatives, as well as to the tools that help me get my most crucial work done. Hi, and welcome to How to Be Creative. So today I'm here with Jennifer Weiss. Hi, Jen.
Hi.
So Jen is the founder of Workroom Social, which is a sewing studio based in Brooklyn, New York, where I also live. And Jen's philosophy is that she believes that every woman can lead a joyful, creative, and confident life. And she knows that sewing your own clothes and wearing these you-made clothes is a surefire way to find joy, creativity, and confidence every day. So Jennifer is on a mission to empower women just like you to sew the clothes they want to wear. I love that so much. I think that's really incredible.
Listen, I'm wearing jeans that I made today.
Yes, and I love them. Those are the Claryville jeans,
they
right?
They are the Claryville jeans. Yes, they are.
They're really, I feel like they're like so flattering, and I love the wash of them especially.
Thanks.
So if you're listening to this and you want to know what they look like, you can actually go find Jen's Instagram, which is just at Workroom Social, correct?
Yep, Workroom Social. Or you can search hashtag Claryville Jeans.
Oh, I love it. That's great.
You can see all the different jeans that other people have made.
Very cool. And you, am I remembering correctly, you did something over the summer where you did like a workshop where everyone made their own?
Yeah, so I teach classes here in Brooklyn, and we teach people, like you said, how to sew their own clothes. We cater specifically to women, but of course men are welcome too, and we have had men in our jeans making intensive.
Oh, I love
it. So that's what you're talking about. We teach a jeans making intensive. People who want to sew their own jeans come to us, and you make them together with us. And the jeans pattern that they use in that class is the Claryville jeans
Very
pattern.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's like your original design.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's so awesome. I love that. So I wanted to get started, just talk a little bit about kind of your background, how you ended up starting this business. And I guess maybe the logical part to start with is, how did you start sewing in the first place?
I was in independent study class in high school, and I had a friend whose mother, she sewed, and I don't totally remember all of the details.
Totally fine.
Because that's high school.
It was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago. But the best thing that I can guess is that she had made me a couple of things, and in this independent study class, I needed a project, so I was like, maybe I should learn how to sew, just because I had this influence. So my teacher at the time was really amazing. She's one of those special teachers that you'll remember forever and ever.
That's great.
And she, I don't know, found me a sewing machine somehow, and I taught myself how to sew through that class.
That's so interesting. And it's funny because we've been friends for several years now, and I don't think I had ever asked you that or knew about that before. Sometimes when I'm talking to someone for the podcast who I already know, I'm asking questions where I'm like, I know the answer to this, but I want everyone else to know it too. And this time, like, I was like, oh no, I learned something. Because I guess in my head, I was like, oh, well, you must have grown up, like your mom must have sewn or your grandmother or something. It must have been this thing that's passed down.
Yeah.
So I kind of love that it's, that's actually kind of a surprise. And so from there, like, how did you end up, because I know early on in your career, you were in PR.
Yeah.
Right? And so, like, you, it's interesting because I think one of the things that I like so much and about you and, like, your work and one of the reasons why I wanted to bring you on the podcast is I think you have this unique blend of the ability, you have this amazing skill, which is sewing, right? And the ability to teach. And then you're also just such a strong strategic communicator.
Oh, thanks.
And I feel like that has to be like a combination of like your PR background and just innate skill. And then also like doing sewing as well, kind of sounds like from high school on. So I'm interested in hearing more about what the evolution looked like from like kind of like a standard like communications career to like morphing into being an entrepreneur and running your own business and this particular type of business.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds so, like, linear and planned.
Oh, no, nothing is.
Yeah, it definitely was not like that. I, you know, sewing was sort of, I've always been a maker ever since I was little. And I think that one of the things I've read somewhere is, like, the thing that you are the most successful at or can be the most successful at when you're a grown-up is, like, the thing that you really just naturally gravitated towards.
Same. That's
as a
me
child.
Too. Yep.
And not that I am, I mean, I run a business. So I'm not sewing all the time. Like, I'm making lots of other things, whether it's, you know, updates to my website or like whatever, producing some new class curriculum or whatever. But I was always making something.
Yeah.
And so I don't know, just throughout, I guess from being a child to an adult, it was always, I was always trying to figure out how to make something new.
Yeah.
So in college, I was really interested in, well, I studied economics, so it was all about sort of like psychology and more about like how to make people do things.
Mm-hmm.
And then I always loved entertainment.
Like behavioral economics?
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
Economics was what I really enjoyed.
How did I not know that? That's so cool. That's
really
interesting.
I don't know. Which I always thought of as more of like a psychology than than a study of money. But anyway, it's all about decision making. So, and then I always loved entertainment, and so I was always interested in making videos and, like, storytelling.
Yeah.
And so that was sort of a hobby in college. I would produce these little, like, video, I don't even know how to explain it, like, little music videos with friends and all kinds of stuff like that. And then that led me to film, so I worked in just, like, interning on film sets and stuff like that, but it was, I don't know, that was not a career that I could see myself doing, mostly because I think I didn't have any role models or, like, no real-life examples of that working for people.
Yeah.
And so that was when I made the leap into an office job, which I knew people who had office jobs.
Right.
So, like, so then I went into film marketing, and then I was making marketing campaigns for movies that, you know, I was working on. That eventually led to me deciding that, I don't know, it just wasn't the right personality fit. It's because at the end of the day, movies in that regard are all about money.
Right.
And making money, which we all need to make money, but it just didn't feel, it wasn't the right fit for me.
Yeah.
So I left and, I don't know. I didn't know what I was going to do for a long time. So then I made all kinds of other random things. I made logos. I did freelance graphic design. I did photography. So I made images. And I don't know. At some point, I decided to make this little business.
Yeah.
And at first, I thought it was going to be a fabric store. But that was too much of a financial investment.
You do produce
produce fabrics, but back then, you know, I thought I would, I don't know, build up an inventory and be like a regular fabric store, but that's so expensive, and I funded the company all by myself, so like that just wasn't feasible. So in the beginning, I was actually making the actual fabrics, like screen printing them by hand, and that just was not a... That's not viable for...
It's not scalable
if you want to
a business that, you know, you can feasibly support yourself on.
Yeah, no, that didn't work. So I started teaching because I love teaching. And I've always, you know, going back to that thing, like, what did you do as a kid? Also, as a kid, I was always, like, volunteering to teach people things and, like, run little trainings.
This completely tracks
knowing
you. It makes so much sense.
Yeah. So, I don't know. And then I was like, huh, well, I was teaching for other studios, both screen printing and sewing, and I was just like, I don't control anything. And I love controlling things. So that was when I decided to start my own teaching studio.
Yeah.
And so that's what we do now. We teach people how to sew clothes.
So did you, when you started your studio, did you rent a space or did you have it?
When I started my studio, I actually started it in my house.
Okay.
So you would show up to my house and probably be a little bit confused. But I had a section of my house that was dedicated to the, you know, quote, studio area. And it was enough space for 6 students, and we did all of our classes there. It was great.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you've, because I've been to a couple of different, I guess, locations that
yes,
you've been
yes,
based
out
of.
Yes, we've moved around.
And then you also do a lot of off-site stuff. Like, you do a camp, right, every
yes.
summer. So maybe we should talk about that. Because
yeah.
actually, I'm always so envious of any kind of camp experience.
Yeah.
And I don't know. At some point, like, it's funny. I kind of have, like, this very, like, long-term life to-do list thing. And at some point, I'm, like, going to take classes with you and I'm going to learn how to sew because...
Yeah, you should.
I've talked. Yeah, and I've, like, talked about this, like, I feel like on a couple of different episodes, or maybe I've just been having this conversation with people in my life lately, but there's this this comic that I discovered that talks about this idea of, like, oh, it takes 7 years to master something. So if you're, like, whatever age, you still have, you know, potentially, like, 11 other lives that you can live.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've started thinking about the rest of my life in terms of, like, what are all the careers that I kind of have, like, knocked off my
mm-hmm.
list because, like, I'm doing this right now. And what's sort of the timeline for, like, doing some of those things later? And one of them that I keep coming back to is, like, I really want to be, like, an avant-garde fashion designer.
Yeah, you should be.
And in order to do that, I want to, like, learn, like, actually, like, how to sew garments. Because,
yeah.
like, I can sit down and, like, draw something, but I don't have any sense of, like,
yeah.
what goes into, like, ensuring that it has the structural integrity to actually,
I
like,
mean,
you know,
yeah.
like, hold
well,
when you walk down the street or things like that.
Yes, I like where your thinking is going, but so the audience at home can't see this, but you're wearing a pretty killer jumpsuit, I think.
Yeah, it's a jumpsuit,
right?
Yeah.
It's this, like, I don't know, grass green, beautiful jumpsuit, and you could totally make this.
You think so?
Yeah.
Okay, awesome.
Absolutely.
This is, like, all I would wear if I could make this. I would just make it in, like, 20 different colors.
You can. You
awesome.
Can.
Yeah, so that's, sorry, that's my kind of little sidebar there. But yeah, like, so camp. Okay, let's talk about camp.
Yeah. So I produce an adult sleepaway camp. It is not during the summer because we actually do it at a real summer camp.
Oh, so they need
so
that space.
So they need
the
space during the summer.
That's right. So it's
fall?
In fall. Okay.
Yeah, it's every October, and it's here in New York State in the Catskills. And it's about 100 women who get together once a year and learn how to sew something over a long weekend and also do summer campy type activities.
That's so
sleep in the
cool.
most uncomfortable bunk bed
oh, no.
in the world. But it doesn't matter.
Yeah, like, who cares? That's not what you're there
yeah.
for. So, and who tends to sign up for that? Is it people who are very experienced sewers?
We have a range.
Yeah.
yeah it really ranges. So we
sewers,
don't have,
sewists, right? What's the word?
So I think sewer is the grammatically correct
term. Okay. I like sewist, though.
But sewist is the, I feel like, the modern version
yeah.
of the word that people are using. I think people don't like the way sewer is spelled.
Because it's sewer.
Sewer, yeah. So, you know, to each their own.
Okay.
Call it whatever you want.
Yeah.
Person who sews.
Yeah.
So it's a range of big, you know, beginning level people to experienced people. We don't do any just like you've never touched a sewing
right.
machine thing.
That
you have
sense.
To know how to
uh-huh.
sew. But we do have classes that range, and our classes are designed for you to really dive deep into a subject. So you only do versus like conventions where you might have like 10 classes
mm-hmm.
and they're all like an hour long, whatever. Our class is designed where you have one and you do
yeah.
it for 16 hours
cool.
over the course of 2 days. Yeah.
I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that sounds so fun.
And you can make the jeans there.
Yeah. Very, very cool.
Mm-hmm.
So getting back to what I was saying earlier about how, like, I've just been really impressed with your strategic communication ability. And obviously, like, as a small business owner, that's huge. So I wanted to talk a little bit about kind of how you've built out, like, using, like, I feel like you've done a really great job of, like, building out a social media strategy to support your brand. So I wanted to talk a little bit about kind of, like, what that's looked like. And like, what does marketing look like in general for you? Not to, like, make this, like, super businessy. Like, I'm asking this question really badly, but, like, I want your perspective on this.
Well, here's
like
the
how
big
you make
secret.
It like
yeah, the big secret.
And how
is,
intentional is any of this also
I
versus
guess
like
the big secret is that it is I just try to be as honest as possible and as real as possible, which is why you'll notice that I go through spurts where, like, I don't post anything because I actually don't really have a plan, which is something that my fellow colleagues have challenged me on to actually sit down and, like, make a real plan. But, you know, it's just me, and sometimes I get tired.
Yeah, fair.
So, you know, I don't do that work. But I think in just trying to be as honest as possible, I think that resonates with people a lot. And so, you know, for me, sewing is about more than just the act of sewing itself. I think, like, hobbies are really important. I think being...
Okay, let's dive into that a little bit more in a bit. But yeah, keep talking. But I love that.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, it's about having interests that, you know, give you more fulfillment in life, that build a community of friends. I always say, like, one of the hardest things to do as a grown-up is to make new friends, to make friends with strangers.
Yeah.
And sewing allows us to do that. So, you know, as far as, like, strategic communications goes, it's just... I'm a human, and I feel all the same things that I think a lot of people feel.
Yeah.
So where I'm comfortable, I try to share that.
Yeah.
I struggle a little bit because I do think if I shared more, then I would grow even bigger and faster. But again, back to that, like, I'm a human, just like everyone else thing. I'm not totally comfortable with... you know, just being, like, fully, fully vulnerable and out there on the internet. And if you listen to some of my other interviews with other people, like, I talk a lot about how, like, I actually don't really like social media.
Yeah.
It makes me very uncomfortable. I've been trying to...
Which is interesting because I feel like you're so good at it and you... And I think this is probably, like, this happens a lot where, like, what people who are observing your social presence see is very different from how it feels to you on the other side of it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm, like, a good in-person person. Mm-hmm. I just feel, which is different, right? I feel like nowadays people love the internet because it gives you the flexibility to, like, portray whatever it is you want to portray. I don't know. I don't like that. I'd rather just, like, meet you and you can actually see that this is just how I am.
Right. Yeah, that's very true. Yeah. So just touching a little bit on your comment about having hobbies.
Yeah.
This is something that you and I have discussed in the past. This idea. So I think there's this pervasive idea. And I think with probably in part because of social media and how we're all so digitally connected all the time, there's this sense that, like, anything you're spending your time on has to be tied to some, like, greater purpose, and in a lot of cases, some kind of, like, money-making purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And I really do see a lot of value in hobbies, and I get the sense sometimes that they're devalued in a way now that I feel like they were more valued, like, I don't know, several decades ago.
Yeah, maybe by society, like you're saying, just in general, but I kind of feel like, who cares? Like, I mean, I think that's the point, or that's part of the thing that you have to figure out what makes you happy and do that thing. And, like, who cares what other people think about it? The New York Times had a good article a couple years ago. I feel like it was called something, The Case for Being Mediocre.
I think you sent it to me, actually.
Yeah,
great. I'll try to dig that up and put it in the show notes.
It's talking about just, like, how people used to have hobbies, and there is a lot of satisfaction that can be found in just spending your time doing something just to do it, just for fun, and, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something that I, you know, really try to do for myself, not just do things where, like, oh, I know if I do this, I'm going to be the best at it, or I'm going to be really good at it. But I try to do a lot of things where I'm like, I'm mediocre at best at this.
Yeah.
But there's still value in my sitting down. And I think it's especially true for things where there's, like, a finished product associated with it. So, for example, you and I met through volunteer work. And a few years ago, you ran a day-long training for us, for our volunteer group. And we made, part of one of our activities was that, because we held it at your studio, we made these little, like, envelope clutches. And I feel like that was just such a satisfying
thing. I totally forgot about that.
Yeah, no, it was amazing. I still have mine. Like, I saw it in my room the other day. It was so funny. I was like, oh, good, I get to see Jennifer this week. Like, and it's great. And, like, it was such a fun project. And it's, like, we did all of those. Like, we sat down, spent, like, I don't know, maybe a couple of hours on it. But it wasn't like, all right, and now we're going to go into the clutch and the envelope clutch producing business. Yeah. And we're just going to sell these. And we're going to, like, you know, build a brand based on them. It's like, no, we sat down, we did the work, we enjoyed the process of creating something for the purpose of creating it. And I try to do more and more of that when I can, especially with, like, I don't think of myself as a person with, like, a lot of kind of visual artistic ability, but I've tried to dabble more in, like, just doing things like, I know I'm going to be bad at that, and that's fine, and I still enjoy the process of, like, sitting down and sketching or, you know, doing watercolor, coloring, or literally
totally.
Whatever it is.
But also, like, I think the wonderful thing is, like, listen, you're not going to be the next Picasso, but the more you do it, the better you're going to get at it. And I think that is totally satisfying.
Agreed. Completely.
Even if you're not going to be the super bestest ever in the whole world, you're going to be better than you were a month ago. And I think that that is cool.
Yeah. And I think it also kind of violates this idea that people have of talent being innate. I think, like, for me, something that I really value is growth and progress and improvement. And I don't know, at least I feel like I was raised with this idea of, like, either you're good at something or you're not, or, like, you like this or you're not, like, you don't like this. And I've tried to be a lot less kind of embrace less of a fixed mindset as I've grown as an adult. And so a lot of that for me is, like, this idea of, like, maybe I'm bad at this today, but if I keep doing it, then I will see incremental growth on it and all an improvement.
Totally.
And I think sewing is probably a really great example of that. Like, it's literally, like, no one is going to sit down at a sewing machine. It's not something you can have an innate skill in, right?
I don't think so.
Like, you might have,
I mean,
like,
definitely certain people are better at just using their hands than others.
That's true.
You know, but yeah, no, it is something you have to learn how to do.
Yeah. And so I feel like I'm jumping around a lot, but one of the things that I wanted to talk about, so we were talking a little bit about social media, I wanted to talk about your Sewing in Real Life campaign, which, as a non-sewist, you know, I've watched it just from the perspective of someone who's interested in your business, who's a friend of yours, and I really like, and I'd like to hear, like, how you describe it, but my impression of it is, like, it's about showing kind of the reality of what your relationship with sewing looks like. So I think on Instagram especially, there's a tendency to, like, show only, and I'm fully guilty of this, and, like, it's actually kind of, like, I like to have a more polished feed, I guess. But I think also, like, that's not the reality of the situation, and it's kind of, like, people create these polished feeds that are supposed to be very aspirational, but how can something be aspirational that isn't based in reality? Do you understand what I'm saying? Sorry.
Yeah,
I'm like,
totally.
I feel like I'm asking this in a very roundabout way, but I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about why you started that hashtag and, like, what that's looked like and, you know, and what you've seen people doing with it.
Yeah, I started it sort of on a whim. Again, back to that whole, like, I don't really have a plan, I'm just trying to be honest thing. I just felt like I hadn't posted on Instagram in a long time, and I was wearing a dress that I had made, and I didn't feel like I was downtown Manhattan. I'm not gonna, like, pop out a tripod and, like, I don't know, selfie myself on the street.
Right.
I feel uncomfortable even just holding my phone for
a face selfie,
let alone a dress. And, you know, I was at the dentist, and I just needed to give myself permission to post a non-model photo because I wanted to share this dress.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I just said, like, why? I mean, of course, there are no rules, right? Like, of course, I can share anything I want, but I do think that there is that extreme pressure, especially I'm posting from a business account. You know, it's not just, like, it's not just me. There is this pressure to look so good and have everything be so polished and whatever. Where does that pressure come from? Again, it comes from myself.
Right.
Like, it's not, there are no rules, but because I had these feelings, I just felt the need to, like, give myself permission to do this, like, to make the rule that I can do this. And, I think a lot of people resonated with it too. Now, not to say that, like, yes, I get it. Some people, their real life is posing for model-y pictures every day. Instagram influencers are a real thing.
It's so much work.
I mean, whatever. People make a living doing that. So I get that. I guess I just wanted to also show, you know, what my real life looks like. Yeah. And that's not it. My real life that particular day was I was at the dentist's office. Yep. So, you know.
Yeah. And I wonder if some of this somehow is tied to what you were saying earlier about feeling like you're very good in person. And I think the closer you can get on social to, like, I know authenticity is, like, such a buzzword now, but, like, the closer you can get to, like, that authenticity of, like, what you're actually like in person, I would suspect that would feel a little bit more comfortable, or at least a little bit more, real to you.
Yeah, that's where I personally feel the best. So there are times when I'll do, like, Instagram stories about things that I'm working on or, you know, whatever. And those feel the best to me because it's just what I'm doing. You know, I haven't rehearsed a message. I'm not trying to whatever. It's just, this is come hang out with me, you know. And I think people like that.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, I like it. I watch that stuff all the time.
And I think if you start from a place of, like, as you were saying, like, you're a human being, you have a sense of, like, what it's like to be a human being and what other human beings are looking for. But I think always if you start from a place with empathy, it's a lot easier to kind of understand, like, what everyone else is looking for and what the intersection of that is with what you have on offer. So so you were talking about, like, being at the dentist, right? And that's obviously kind of an atypical day and what it looks like in your life, right? Like, we don't go to the dentist
once a week or every day.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, like, is there a typical day in the life of running your sewing studio? Or, like, what could a typical day look like? Or what are the different things that kind of go into running your business?
I think probably no typical day, although I would probably get a lot more done if I did create more structure for myself. But, you know, I think in any small business, I'm doing everything from literally cleaning the toilet in the studio space to right now I'm building a new website because our old website is old and buggy and crashing. So I'm doing that. I'm also doing all the logistic stuff for this camp that we talked about earlier. So that's coming up in about a month, and there's a lot of prep to do. Meanwhile, I've got three big classes that are running in the studio this month. So before I came here, I was just setting up, prepping for the class that's running this weekend. And through all of it, I'm trying to make time to build my YouTube channel because if you remember earlier, I said I used to make fun little videos and I'm trying to force myself into being more creative and get back to some of those things that I really enjoyed when I was younger.
That's so fun.
So, yeah, I haven't figured out how to build that time in yet, though.
I love that.
But it's in the back of my mind all the time.
So another question that arose while I was just listening to you talk is kind of about, so when you're an entrepreneur and you're kind of, I feel like in a lot of ways that necessitates, like, sort of like building out a career track that it's not like you can look at someone else and do exactly what they did, right? Because like your business is going to differ from any other business that you look at and you as a person and a business owner are going to differ. So I'm wondering, how do you kind of up-level your skills? Like how do you get better? Right? Like it's really hard. It's my biggest
complaint about being self-employed is I don't have a boss to learn from.
Right.
Yeah. I lean a lot on my colleagues. So I have really good relationships with several of my, quite frankly, competitors.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask too. Yeah, like, what does community look like in this industry?
But we are super supportive of each other. Even this morning, I was struggling with some stuff and, you know, texting some friends, I need help, and everyone rallies, and, you know, so that's good. We can learn from each other in that way. But I will say, this question that you've asked about, like, how to grow professionally is a really hard thing, I think, for self-employed people to do. Especially when you're so small like me. I don't know. I imagine, I'm trying to think about, like, CEOs or, like, really top people at big companies. I feel like they have more resources because more people believe in them because they are more successful already.
And so other stuff gets pushed up to them almost. Like, it's not just, like, if you had a boss in, like, a traditional hierarchical office situation where, like, your boss would be like, oh, I think you should go to this training. We're going to pay for you to fly to this conference or whatever it is. But I think also, like, if you're, if let's say, a CEO of, like, a Fortune 500 company, it's also, like, you've got a team underneath you who's, like, part of their job is probably to know, like, to anticipate, like, what does this person need to know next?
Yeah.
Like, where's the world headed?
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, help them, help ensure that they have all of the materials they need or whatever it is to get there. Yeah, so that's really interesting. And I think, like, also with your business where it's, like, I feel like there are so many different types of skill sets that go into it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, to me, would also, like, seem like a challenge. Like, how do you decide, how do you figure out, like, allocating your time?
Yeah, again, another really challenging thing that I have faced, because when it's only you at my size, I have limited resources. So I can spend my time doing A or B. And a lot of times I have to balance, like, making money now versus the potential to make money in the future. And that, I think, can be a hard thing for a small business, because sometimes it feels like if I don't make the money now, I'm not going to make it to be able to make the money in the future. And so you have to sort of, I don't know, just make your best, most educated guesses to decide how to spend your time.
Yeah, it's like that urgent versus important
matrix. Totally.
So getting back to our earlier discussion on hobbies. So obviously you are a business owner. Time is at a premium. How do you make time for things that, you know, like hobbies that don't necessarily correlate or correspond to what you do in your business?
I have been working on that for the last year because it is really important, I think, to me. So I don't have a good answer, but I will tell you about some of the hobbies that I've kind of been exploring. And so one is knitting. I learned how to knit a couple years ago, and that's a pretty easy and portable thing to have. So I build time for knitting into transit, like when I'm commuting or travel. Or sometimes, I'm not very good, so I have to look at my knitting, but my dream is, like, one day I'll be able to, like, I don't know, watch
to
TV,
do the thing and,
knit or something. I've also been trying to read a little bit more because I don't go into an office anymore. I don't have a lot of reading time
because, you don't
again,
commute.
I don't commute. And so when I do commute, it's sort of in short spurts versus, like, a longer sit down. So knitting has been better on my commuting time than reading.
Yeah.
So I've been trying to read a little bit every night before bed. That's
what are you reading?
Good. Oh, actually, I'm reading a really great book right now called So You Want to Start a Podcast.
Oh my God, you are?
Yes.
That's
amazing. Not because I want to start a podcast, but because of I want to build up my YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And the book is really about, like, storytelling.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, that's so cool.
Yeah,
okay, so. I'm going to add that in the show notes, and also I should probably read it.
Yeah, it's great. Well, and it is podcast specific, so.
Right.
It is good.
Yeah.
But I have, again, been wanting to build out my YouTube channel. So that is, it is tied to my business, but still hobby-ish.
Yeah.
And I haven't figured out a good way to do that yet. So maybe I can come back next year and tell you more.
Yeah, no, that would be amazing. and then, like, my other question is, even with hobbies that aren't tied to your business, right, do you feel like they kind of pay dividends in sort of roundabout ways?
Meaning?
Like, does like having, like, diversity of how you spend your time, like, positively impact your ability to do the things that you get paid to do?
I'm sure they do. I don't know if I can articulate exactly how. One thing that I do really like to do that I stink at is building things.
Mm-hmm.
So I was gonna say woodworking, but it's not woodworking because it's so I don't know, remedial. Like woodworkers would
like
be
a woodworker is gonna like come out of the woodwork and like, I'm sorry to make that joke.
No.
But, like,
but listen, I can use a circular saw and like I can cut some wood. So
cool.
You know, my old studio location, I had built all the furniture there.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's
okay, you might be a woodworker then.
It's just shelving and desks and things. But, you know, so I like doing, my husband and I built our dining table in our house. So I like doing things like that.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is directly applicable to sewing because sewing, you know, they're both building
things that are flat into
something 3D.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just another way to exercise that like spatial, I don't know, visibility in your mind or whatever, like thinking through in order of operations. Okay, you put this together first, and that means you put this together second. And if you get the order out of whack, then what does that mean to your final product? And, you know, that kind of stuff.
And, like, at what point can you, like, is there a point of no return where, like, you've gone too far in, like, one quote-unquote wrong direction where you can't kind of, like,
unravel or unbuild. As you're not trying to, if we're advocating for the case of being mediocre, everything is salvageable in some way.
That's very true. Yeah. I mean, I recently took this class on tapestry weaving.
Oh, cool.
And I, like, I think I had this cute idea that I was going to be really good at it right off the bat. And because there are other things that I've done, like I've been doing a lot of these alcohol ink art things recently, where I like did kind of feel like I had like a baseline like level of decency at it starting off. And the tapestry weaving, I was like, yeah, this it's almost like what's that thing called where like a Pinterest fail.
Oh.
You know what I mean? There's that show that they, like, based off of Pinterest fails where it's, like, the Cookie Monster cupcakes that, like, are these pristine, like, they look like they were made by a professional baker. And then there's, like, the, like, melted face where, like, it barely looks like Cookie Monster.
Oh, no.
And I feel like that's, like, kind of where I'm at on my tapestry weaving. And yet, at the same time, like, I feel like doing that is making me, is, like, paying dividends on other creative projects that I'm doing, like things like that. I tend to feel, and I don't know if I can properly articulate this, but like the more different like buckets that I have a hand in on like creative projects and stuff, it like has this way of making my mind feel more expansive overall.
Mm-hmm.
So that when I sit down to do something that is like squarely within my wheelhouse, like I've been writing a lot of fiction this year, or you know, like I feel pretty comfortable like talking to people on podcasts, things like that. Like I feel like I come at it from almost like a different like with a different energy that all the other stuff feeds into.
Yeah,
so
I think
that's
that
really interesting.
Sense.
Yeah. And so as we start to wrap up, like I'm wondering, like, so I think there's this idea of like people are creative or people are not creative. And I think creativity can be kind of an intimidating word sometimes for people who don't view themselves that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes the way that I'll like reframe it is like creativity can also be seen as like a synonym for like resourcefulness. So I'm interested in like what that looks like in your business, or like if you have any examples of how you've been, have you used your creative mind to like be resourceful to solve problems that have arisen as a business owner? I know that's a big question. Sorry, just throw that in at the end.
Yeah, that is a big question. I love solving problems, and I think that this comes from my old career as a publicist.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite job used to be attending press junkets and sitting in the like headquarter room, the war room, and I would just sit at the phone. And so anytime anyone had a problem, they would call my line. And so I would be like, you know, have one phone receiving the problems, come up with a solution, pick up another phone and like, or, you know, dictate like what the solution was to the problem.
I wish this were like a video podcast because like I want people to have like the video of you like just like pantomiming like one phone
and
then the other phone.
I'm using my hands
yeah.
to like fake the phones in my ears. So, you know, I'm not totally, when you say like business problems, you know, of course I think of sort of abstracty things, but I can think of our the camp that we produce. There's always problems with that, and so I think being able to think creatively or, you know, just think differently to fix something that is broken. I do that at that event at a ton. Our first year, we blew electricity in the building.
And oh, my gosh.
You, to run a sewing machine, you need electricity. Yep. So, you know, that was a problem that had to be solved. We did that by finding really long extension cords and running power from the one part of the building, from the actually the kitchen that ran all of the industrial refrigerators.
Yeah. Oh my God.
We unplugged all the refrigerators and ran power. There was nothing in them, so no food on that.
Good.
And we ran those throughout the building. I've had, you know, for the camp, I have staff that fly in from the United States and sometimes out of country, and I've had two situations where staff members weren't able to attend last minute.
Oh,
so
no.
Then it's like, who's teaching this class?
Right.
And how, you know, what are we doing for that? And so, you know, being able to solve those problems, I think it requires special creative skills. And yeah, I don't think creativity means just being able to draw a pretty picture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's there's lots of different kinds of creative. And one of my favorite things that I think you should link to is the, I don't remember if it's Harvard or I feel like it's one of the Ivy League schools.
Yeah.
They have a department on creative problem solving
design.
I think it's called design thinking.
Stanford D School.
There you go.
They have an amazing,
mm-hmm.
their website's actually really great. They've got a lot of resources, so I should share those. But sorry, continue.
Yeah, I just love that philosophy. It's all about like having a problem, you know, coming up with a solution and then trying that solution. And if that solution doesn't work, try, you know, going
like
back.
Iterating. And figure out like why.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that that is a great way to think about creativity, because your problem could be, I want to make this pretty picture, I don't know how, or it could be, I have this like really important bad thing happening, how do I make it fixed?
Yeah. Or like you think you're solving one problem for a client or customer or student or whatever it is, and you're actually, the problem you are trying to solve is not the problem they're coming to you with, and maybe they're not articulating it.
Sure, yeah.
Because
yeah.
you, and I think this is, like, one of the tenets of actually design thinking is, like, getting to the bottom of, like, what is the actual problem you're trying to solve.
Yeah.
So I love that. So where can people find you?
Well, listen, you people in podcast land are interested in learning how to sew your own clothes, because let me tell you, everyone's got to wear clothes every day.
It's true, sadly. This oppressive society we live in.
You can find me at workroomsocial.com, where we have all of our classes listed for right here in Brooklyn, and sometimes I travel to teach other places too.
Very cool. So I will include all of that in the show notes, as long as where to find you on social media, although obviously we've...
Workroom Social, everywhere.
Yeah.
Luckily, I have a weird name that...
Oh, wait, actually, I'm sorry, so we were wrapping up, but can we talk about where the name came from and how you decided on it?
Oh, yeah. So I was actually talking to some friends about this recently because, you know, if you have like a sewing-sounding name, you run the risk of other people using that same name without knowing or whatever. So the original company name was going to be Top Stitched or Top Stitch or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Which is just visible stitching on clothes.
I know that from Legally Blonde.
Oh, okay.
But that's it.
There you go.
That's my reference.
And the recommendation to me was do not do that because you might be faced with, you know, infringing on someone else's rights or someone coming in later infringing on yours. So I went back to the drawing board trying to figure out a name. And, you know, I think sewing and any kind of hobby or creative endeavor is work, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think that work necessarily needs to be, like, needs to have a negative connotation. Work can be a positive thing. And we do work in a room. So I don't know. That's just how that came together.
Yeah.
But I also wanted to communicate this idea of building community and having fun and making friends. So that's where the social part came in.
I love it. It's perfect. I've wondered that for years and I never thought to ask you until now.
Yeah.
So
there you go. Workroom Social.
Yeah. Great. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today.
Thank
I'm really excited
Thanks for having me.
Bring this to my audience. And again, I'll drop everything in the show notes, but Jennifer, thanks so much.
Thank you.
So that's this week's episode of How to Be Creative. As always, you can find show notes, including a complete episode transcript and links to everything discussed at howtobecreative.org.